Welcome to the Do Good to Lead Well podcast. If you're passionate about mastering self-leadership, then you're in the right place. I have always been curious about and fascinated by the pursuit of leadership excellence. This is why I pursued my PhD in psychology with a specialization in business, and I've continued to dedicate my career to understanding the science and practice of positive leadership. My name is Craig Dowden. I'm a best-selling author, award-winning keynote speaker, executive coach, and member of the Forbes Coaches Council. Each week, I'll bring you world-class content on the science and practice of positive leadership. Through my conversations with best-selling authors, TED speakers, and top CEOs, you'll be able to leverage their insights and experience so you can maximize your potential and be the leader the world needs you to be. Hello, everyone, and welcome to part two of this special two-part interview with Dan Turner, the award-winning CEO of Experigo. In part one, Dan shared his improbable journey from being a tow truck driver to now being CEO and shared lots of fantastic insights based on his personal experience, life lessons, leadership lessons, and in particular, the importance of finding mentors, setting big, hairy, audacious goals, and the resilience that's required in terms of pursuing our dreams. Now in part two, we're going to pick up midway through our conversation, where Dan and I dive really deeply into how to build an award-winning culture. Experigo has been recognized as one of Canada's most admired corporate cultures for multiple years. In fact, this year marks the third consecutive time that Experigo has been recognized with this honor. And in fact, it represents almost a decade, essentially 10 years of being an exceptional place to work. And so during this conversation, Dan and I talk about the concrete strategies, the practices that he uses and his team uses to build this exceptional culture. And at a time when employees are highly disengaged, when you see lots of focus in terms of people being burnt out and not feeling connected to their organizations, Experigo is a shining light in that conversation. And so I'm very excited to share this second part of the conversation with Dan Turner, because we can all learn from the passion and the energy and the insights that he shares. And as I mentioned, there are fantastic, tangible takeaways that all of us can reflect on. So I hope you enjoy the second part of this special series. And thank you, as always, for supporting the podcast. Really excited to dive into this with you as well, Dan, because what I think is remarkable about your journey, you touched on this too, that you've taken those lessons and that's propelled your success. And then you're a CEO, and now you've built an award-winning culture, highly respected culture, admired culture. And what's incredible is it's not just a singular event. So some companies can do it right, like the one time they make it a, this has been a sustainable, consistent in so many different categories. What do you feel are the components of a great culture? And how have you been able to not only build it, sustain it, grow it? It's like you were saying earlier, it doesn't stop. It keeps moving forward. So I'd love to start that conversation with you.
Yeah, there's a lot to that. And what I would say is, you know, the first thing is that, you know, culture, although it starts with me, it isn't about me or the executive team. It's about everybody in the company. And I remind everybody in the company of that on a regular basis. This is about us. We just accepted our latest culture award last week. And I sent out, you know, myself and members of the leadership team were able to attend the awards dinner. And unfortunately, you know, we can't have the whole company there. But I sent out an email to the entire team just saying, look, we couldn't all be there, but let me share it with you so that you can, you know, at least understand what the experience was like. Because I got to walk across the stage and accept an award on behalf of, you know, a couple hundred people. And that is an honor for me. And that was something that I was super proud to be able to do. But I let everybody know that when I grabbed that award, and we took photos of me with the award, that was for all of us, that, because we all contributed to that. And so how we've been able to, you know, how we've been able to establish the culture that we have early on, you do little things, you know, you establish a set of values You get people to actually provide feedback to what those values should be, because you want people to have their fingerprint on it, and then they own it. And so we did a lot of those kinds of exercises early on, and we got people buying into the idea that if we live our life here at work, you know, through those values, and our values are embedded in everything that we do, Craig. When we do, you know, our twice a year performance reviews, we don't necessarily review how the person did in achieving the objectives of the business, although that's important too. We look at and say, how did you contribute to the values this year? And the person has to provide their own self-assessment, and then their manager provides an assessment of that as well. And then we give awards on every quarter. There's an award for each of the five values on who demonstrated those values best over the last 3 months. We have three annual awards that we provide to three people who have demonstrated those values throughout the entire year. And so it becomes really embedded in the DNA. And then for me, it's about a lot of communication. I'm regularly communicating, and I encourage all of the leaders on the team to do it. But from my perspective as a CEO, I do a meet and greet with every new team member as they join the organization. I feel it's important that they know who I am. And it's interesting because almost every time the feedback is, I didn't even know who the CEO was at my last company. And here I am on day two and I'm talking to them. And what that gives, so there's value for them for sure. But the value for me is even greater, because the value for me is I get to, first of all, put a name to a face of a new individual in the organization. And it doesn't matter at what level they're joining the organization, they get to meet with me. We talk about the history of Experigo, and I give them, you know, we've been around for over 30 years, and I think it'll be 32 years this summer. And it's really about the history, because the history sets the context for the future. Because then I share with them the vision of where we're taking this company and why, and what their role is in it, and how they're going to be able to help us get there. I'm able to give them my perspective on culture and how our culture contributes to performance, which is something that I've seen in spades over the course of the last 4 years through the pandemic, Craig. You know, one of the interesting things, and this is going to kind of speak to the other part of the question that you asked me, is like, and how do you keep moving the bar, right? Because how you keep a culture strong and healthy over the sustained amount of time that we have is you got to keep raising the bar. You got to keep looking for new ways to get people more engaged, to get people more invested in the company. You know, we are now transitioning to this purpose-led organization where everybody can get behind a cause bigger than just making a buck every day. And where this came from, and I know there's other companies doing it, but where it came from for us is in the first 6 or 12 months of the pandemic. If you reflect back, Craig, we all thought it was only going to be a few weeks and we'll be back to work. When we realized that that wasn't happening, I started to get really concerned, because we had never operated in a work from home environment. And I was concerned, would the culture continue to be robust? Would the company continue to perform at the level that it was? And what I was able to observe, you know, in that 6 to 12 month range, was a company whose culture was thriving more than ever before. And a company whose performance was stronger than it had ever been. And that one kind of made me go, why is that, right? And I really couldn't, it was a little bit dumbfounding to me on why that's the case, because I was expecting the exact opposite to happen. And when I spent the following year and reflected back on that, this is what I came up with. And this is my perspective on it. I don't know if it's entirely accurate, but I feel pretty good about it. What I realized, when we sent everybody home, when this scary disease hit the country, everybody was worried about themselves and their health. They were worried about their family members, and they were worried about whether they would continue to have a job beyond whatever was going to happen. At Experigo, what we did is we really said to everybody, I mean, one of the first things that I said to everybody, our number one priority, and this is the people first mentality, right? Our number one priority is to make sure everybody's healthy. So within 3 days of kind of COVID hitting the shores of Canada, we sent everybody home, not knowing what that would mean for the business. It could have been a disaster, but we did it because we wanted to protect everybody's health. And then we said, we want to protect you and your family's health. And we introduced some new benefits, some mental health benefits and some extended benefits, to just make sure that we are going to be able to, you know, make sure that their health was covered, because that was everybody's big concern. And then lastly, what I said, I'm going to make it my number one mission that not one person loses their job at Experigo because of the pandemic. There's other reasons that people lose jobs, but it won't be because of the pandemic. And I'm proud to say that after a couple of years, we look back and not one person did lose their job. And what that did is it really created an entire organization who had purpose. And our purpose was, let's look out for each other's health and the health of our families. And let's keep this company humming so that we can all stay gainfully employed and we don't have to worry about losing our house or, you know, being able to meet our bills and pay for medical bills or whatever the case may be. And so when I reflect back and say, wow, that's what happened. We rallied around a cause that was bigger than our company. And we all were determined and showed a just crazy amount of resilience that we would not fail. And that was a kind of a eye-opening moment for me, which was, well, what happens when the pandemic goes away? What are we going to rally behind after that? And so that's where we started our purpose journey. And we're only just getting started. So we came up with our purpose statement, which was to elevate the human experience by connecting people to those that can help. I mean, we do that every day just in the nature of our business. We're helping people that are stranded on the road every day in their car. So that's already really relevant to what we do as an organization. But how can we do that for each other? How can we do that for our clients and their customers? How can we do that for the bigger federation that we're a part of? We're a big part of the Canadian Automobile Association. And then lastly, how can we do that for the communities that we serve in or the global community in which we all exist? We're building the strategy behind that right now and trying to align all of that, which is not an easy task. But what we're trying to do is create a purpose that's bigger than the organization, that we can come into work every day and feel really proud about the things. I mean, we still got to do the block and tackling of the business every day, but what can we do to extend this beyond? And this is something that's come up in our engagement survey every year, especially by the younger generations who have said, I want to work for a company that stands for more than just profit. I get you need to make profit, but I want to work for a company that stands for more than just profit. And so that's what we're trying to create. Like I said, we're early in our journey, but this is the next step of elevating our culture to a whole new level. You know, I can already tell that it's going to be successful because we've got an entire team that has bought into the fact that culture is at the cornerstone of performance. We have a question in our survey, Craig, which is, do you agree with the statement that our corporate culture contributes to my performance? And 91% of our team members agree with that statement. Everybody has bought into it. They drank the Kool-Aid, as I like to say, of the fact that why culture is important is because it gets all of us rowing the boat in the same direction in the same way. And that's powerful stuff. And one of the things that I like to tell people, you know, I get asked a lot, Craig, is to Dan, kind of like what you just did, like, Dan, how do you build this culture? And I just gave you the long answer, at least one of the long answers. It could be longer, but there's a time limit on this podcast. But the short answer is this, right? The short answer is, it's a saying that you've probably heard from your mom or your grandmother. And that saying is, treat people the way that you would want to be treated. If we all do that within our organization, then we're all going to have mutual respect. We're all going to be transparent, where it's just everything that you need to be successful. Just imagine, never mind in our company, imagine if you did that in society today, which I think is something that's sadly lacking from society. It sounds very ambitious, just treat people the way that you want to be treated, but it's really quite simple, right? It's about caring. It's about being authentic. And we've all, what I say to new team members when they're joining the company is, we've all had that job where, at least most of us have, where on Sunday night, you've already got that bad feeling in the pit of your stomach because you got to go to work Monday morning. What we're trying to do at Experigo is to make sure that you don't have that feeling. Now, I'm not here to tell you that our company is the best. You know, there's days where maybe you don't want to go into the organization to work that day, but we try to make it so that's not a regular thing that's taking place. And this is how we do it, right? We make it so that people actually enjoy coming to work. They can come to work and be their authentic self. We're not going to, you know, be overcritical about mistakes that are made. We're going to support each other, elevate each other, celebrate successes together. And that's really been at the heart of what we've been doing here for the last 9-10 years.
Well, and awesome. And thank you for breaking it down for us, because again, we can talk about these ideas and ideals, and then it's like, okay, so what's the roadmap? What are the concrete steps? And I love how you're shining a light on that. And a follow-up question that I have is that, as I shared at the beginning, I shared the setup to this part of the conversation. You haven't just won a culture award where someone will go, okay, checkbox, awesome, we've done that, been there, done that, move on. You've done it multiple times. And so there would be a tremendous opportunity to just kind of go rest on your laurels and say, we've solved the culture thing. And so talk me through, because I think that's so powerful that you and the leadership team and the organization has decided, no, we're going to keep
pushing on this journey? Like, what enabled you? What was the fuel behind wanting to achieve more, reach for more on that cultural front and move into that purpose-led organization? Because some people, that contrarian view being, who cares, about purpose, and that's, it's a waste of time. It's that fluffy stuff. Talk us through what you were able to do to get people aligned around that, and then that tremendous power that you're seeing within it.
Well, I think some of it starts with me, right? I think some of it starts with my competitiveness and again, a little bit of ego. I want us to be a fantastic company. I don't want to retire from my career until I leave a very positive legacy of leadership behind me. And that's really what I'm trying to do right now. And I share a lot about my culture I've been asked to present at several organizations where I presented to their executive team or their board of directors. I've done podcasts before. One of the questions I've had regularly is, well, Dan, with how successful you guys have been with your culture, do you ever think that you got nowhere to go but down from here? And that's when I like to say, and I share this with my team all the time, is maybe they just don't know how good a culture can potentially be. Well, they don't know how high the bar can be raised. And so if you think that the bar only goes as high as where we are today, well, guess what? That's where you're staying or you're going below that. But we keep trying to elevate the bar because I think that we can continue to do that. And one of the things that's really important to me is that I share this with every new team member as they join the organization. I share it with all team members on a regular basis. So you said we won three awards consecutively for Canada's Most Admired Corporate Cultures, which is becoming a bigger and bigger award every year. We were at the ceremony last week, and the amount of CEOs and companies that were there was the biggest group of people I've seen in a long time. And so everybody's realizing that this is becoming more important. And getting that external recognition is great, but it's more about the benchmarking yourself against other companies that are doing this well. And when I say that I've won three awards, here's the real great part of that is we first started trying to achieve this award back in 2015. We did not get the award. So we tried again in 2016, and we did not get the award in 2016. But 2017, and by the way, this award, companies have to put in a submission of the things that they do to build their culture and maintain their culture. And there's a board of governors that reviews these submissions and decides who are the most admired corporate cultures in Canada. And I've actually served on that board of directors in the past as well. So I know the process is very rigorous. But not only do we have the three awards, but we won it in 2017. And then once you win it, you're not allowed to be nominated again for 3 years. You get recertified in those in-between years. So 2020, when we were allowed to be nominated again, we were, and we won it again. And then in 2023, we were once again allowed to be nominated, and we won it a third time. So it's three awards, but it's 9 years of maintaining that culture, right? So you can't let your foot off the pedal on this one. And that's why I kind of love the fact that we have these Waterstone Canada's Most Admired Awards, because, and so how I keep people motivated around it, and this is one of the ways anyways, I share this with everybody, and it's one of the things that I discuss in the new team member meet and greets, which is when you win four of these awards, they put you in the Hall of Fame. So I let everybody know that my goal as the CEO of this organization, one of the big goals that I have is to be in the Waterstone Hall of Fame for Canada's Most Admired Corporate Cultures. Now, that's a small group of companies that are in there, and I would love for the Experigo logo to be in that Hall of Fame one day, and we're one win away from it. But that's 3 years out yet, right? So we can't let our foot off the pedal. And I let everybody in the company know that they now share that goal with me. It's not my goal. It's our goal now. When we get to accept that fourth award in 2026, everybody gets to walk up there on the stage with me again, not physically, but spiritually at least. And to me, that's part of the motivation. The other part of the motivation is this is a differentiator for us. When you have people that actually care about each other, care about the performance of the business, they will, I talked about the resilience and the persistence. And, I have regular monthly management meetings where every management meeting is a bit of a theme for me, where I talk about those things like motivation, things like persistence and resilience. They now see that when we go out and we have this type of culture, then it's a competitive advantage because we have some of the highest customer satisfaction scores in our industry. We continue to be very innovative in the things that we do. We just went through a multi-launch, so a program launch, three different launches within only a month of each other, and something that looked like it was going to be impossible almost. And the team just doubled down and got it done because they care. And so it's a differentiator for us, and everybody knows it. When you come into our organization, I think we do a pretty good job at making sure everybody's a cultural fit these days, but there's the odd person that's not. And when you're not, you stand out pretty quickly, you know, and those are the individuals that typically don't last long in our organization. But things like that, attrition stays low. People don't want to leave. We, during the, you know, the great resignation, as it was called, I've heard from other companies that were similar to us where they were losing some good talent quite regularly. We did not experience that. And when I asked some of the individuals, because we do these things called stay interviews, where we go out to A players and ask them, why are you here still? And what can I do to make sure you never leave? And what some of the responses that came back to us were, look, I get a job offer every other day for more money than you pay me, but I like it here. You guys treat me well. It's a great environment. And so that's when you win the game, right? And so that's why, to me, culture is one of the five pillars that we have in our strategic plan that we present to our board of directors every year. Purpose is a key initiative this year to go out and build a strategy around purpose so that we can elevate to a new level. And it's probably something that I spend a good amount of time every day thinking about, talking about, and bringing to life within the organization. As I said, the culture starts with me. It's not about me. It's about all of us, but it starts with me. I have the ability, the influence to facilitate the things that we need to do to keep the culture moving in the right direction. We do a lot of measurement. We do a lot of, you know, those measurements give us insights to the opportunities. Then we do action plans around those opportunities. So whenever we see that there's a hole to plug or a gap to cover, we try to make sure that we're making the right moves to, and then we share that with the team. So, you know, how many times when you're in an organization, do you fill out a survey and you never hear what happened to that information?
Right. Yeah.
And we, every year we do the survey. It's an engagement survey, and it has a bunch of like cultural dashboard attached to it that sets the benchmarks for us. But every year we will share with the team those survey results. Here's where we were strong. Here's where there's opportunity. Here's a plan that we've created to address those opportunities. If you've got feedback for us on that plan, love to hear it. And then we provide updates on, okay, where is that plan at? Have we made progress? Because if you don't do anything with the data, if you don't share the data, then people start to realize that it's just an exercise that they have to go through that takes, you know, half hour out of their life, right? So we stay very focused on the things that got us here, but we're always looking to build upon that to make sure that we're always elevating the bar.
Well, and so much there. It's essential. As you say, culture does start with you. And then what I love about how you're framing it, and then it's all of us. It starts with you and it's all of us. As you say, when you're looking at achieving the wall, you know, the Hall of Fame award in 2026, like that's just not for you. That's everybody. Everybody is behind that goal. And I think that's just so vitally important in terms of making it for everybody. What I also appreciate what you're sharing is that it's not just the right thing to do. It's not a feel-good exercise. It is, because you're connecting with people as human beings and you're caring for people and supporting them. And as you're articulating, this has powerful business results like customer satisfaction scores, engagement, you know, retention, all of that great stuff that CEOs are interested in. It has a direct line on. And so I really love how you're painting the picture around this is above and beyond engagement. That's important. Yes, for sure. And then it has an impact on so many different things. The last thing I'll say is I love the boldness of the vision for the future. Like, once again, hey, we've done this thing. We're almost in the Hall of Fame. Let's figure out something else cool to pursue, right? Like, I think that's just fantastic.
Well, it relates back to what I had said earlier, right? Which is, you know, just personally, I like to always be on a mission. So this is the mission of the organization. Like, I always share with the team that I have two jobs in the organization. And I know that doesn't seem like a lot because some people are doing more things than that, but they're two big ones. The one is I got to make sure that people in the organization are happy, engaged, and wanting to come here and be a part of it every day. And that's something that, you know, as I said, that's the number one priority because of all that that delivers. But the second priority, sometimes these are opposed to each other, but the second priority is to maintain the health of the organization as well. Because at the end of the day, you know, growth and profitability are still important, but can we do that and have people who are enjoying the experience and having fun and doing all those great things? Can we do those two things together? And I know that we can. And that's why that's the mission for the business, right? I tell everybody, those are the two priorities that I have. Help me get there, right? Let's keep the business healthy. We all play a role in that. But at the same time, let's keep this strengthening culture. Let's keep it rolling. Let's make it the best. I'm very happy to be one of Canada's most admired corporate cultures. I'd love to be the best corporate culture. I don't know how they'd ever measure that, but to me, that's what I'm trying to achieve. And, you know, and I think we're doing all the right things, just staying focused on it. It's also trial and error. There's things that we've done that didn't have the impact that we thought it would have. There's other things that we didn't think would have a big impact and did. You know, as we move forward now with all of our values firmly entrenched in the business, but then layer purpose on top of it, I think we've got nowhere to go but up.
I think what's great is, and knowing you, it's always, you know, it's something you always want to have that impact, the positive impact, as you shared right at the beginning of our conversation, bringing out the best in people. Let's just keep going. And also appreciate how you're making another great point around, a lot of times people see the pursuit of corporate excellence, performance, success, right? Financials, whatever you want to call it. Like, you've got to sacrifice things along the way, right? You can't be a caring and a positive culture. Like, you have to get the elbow sharp and everything else. And what I really appreciate about your perspective is, hey, those two things aren't in competition. Those two things go together, and we can pursue them. I mean, it doesn't mean that we lose sight of any of them. It just means both of them are important. So it's an and statement as opposed to, well, this is an either or. Another idea that I want to explore with you, and this has just been so rich, so thank you for all of your great insights, Dan. You talked about being authentic, and you hear that. It's a term that comes up, you know, authenticity and how important that is. Can you share a little more about what that means to you? How, as a CEO, you also talked about vulnerability. How do you bring that to the table with maximum impact? Because clearly you have. And for some, it can be either a nebulous term, they're not sure what it means or how do I do it, or it can be scary. Like, I don't want to be authentic. I don't want to be vulnerable. I just got to be the smartest person in the room.
Yeah, I think for some people, it's not easy. I think it comes second nature to me. Just again, you know, my upbringing and my early career of, you know, having to work hard and being on the bottom rung, I carry that with me every day, right? And, you know, and you're right, it does scare some people. I've had conversations with some CEOs who have been those kind of command and control CEOs for a number of years. And when I talk to them about things of authenticity and being genuine and vulnerability, they look at me like I'm crazy. And what are you talking about? Like, no, you need to be this guy that barks commands from on high, and they need to have fear in you. And that's just never been me. That's not how I operate. And nor do I think it's the path to success in this day and age. There'll be a level of success, but I don't believe that there'll be sustainable success, especially with the new generations. They're not signing up for that. So, and I'll relate it back to a story that happened early in my career, Craig, which was when I went for a job interview for a job I really wanted. And it was an executive recruiter, and the interview went fabulous. Every question he had, I had all the experiences and I had the answers on the tip of my tongue. And it was maybe, you know, just one of the better interviews that I've ever had. And at the end of the interview, this individual said to me, "You are great, Dan, and you're a great guy. And that was a great interview, but you're never going to get this job." And I was like taken aback. I thought I had just slam dunked it, that this was going to be my new role. And when I asked why, the response that I got was, "This is a job that requires somebody to be good in business, and nice guys are never good in business." That was what he said to me. And I remember being really taken aback by that. And I even said to him, I was fairly young at the time. I was probably, again, a little cocky. But what I said to him was, "I'm concerned for you that that's what you think about the world." And I've never let that go either, right? You can be a nice person and be successful too. Those two are not separate and opposed to each other. And so when we talk about me as a leader, and obviously there's other leaders in the organization that lead the same way or we wouldn't be successful. But when we talk about leading with authenticity and leading with vulnerability, it's really about letting people know that you're no different than them. I'm no more special than you because I'm the CEO. And I regularly remind people, there was a point in time earlier on in my career where I hid the fact that I was a tow truck driver and had never gone to college or university. And now I will tell anybody that will listen, simply because I want people to understand that I am no more special than you. And you have the ability to become me as long as you're willing to put in the work and invest the energy that's required. And so I shared that story to everybody. I mean, I had I have two daughters who are quite successful today, but when they were doubting their ability to achieve their goals, I used myself as the example. Like, look at your dad. He, tow truck driver to CEO, that was not an easy journey. You could not have mapped that out if you wanted to, but I did it. And now you guys can achieve what. And so that's something that I want people to understand. And really, it's just about showing up every day and being a normal guy. I don't put on any airs in front of people. I when I talk to people in the call center, and when I talk to people like you, Craig, or I talk to, you know, other people on my leadership team, you get the same guy. It's not going to be any different. And I let them know, like, when I mess up, I'll let people know I mess up. When I don't know something, I will let people know that I don't know that. And this is a learning opportunity for me. I'm regularly accepting, and we've done several of these, I'm regularly accepting of 360 reviews where my team gives me anonymous feedback on my leadership, because I know there's blind spots that I can't see, and I want them to call them out for me because I want to learn how to be a better leader. And I think when you're showing a level of honesty, giving people a reason to trust you, because I'm a big believer that I will trust everybody until you give me a reason not to. And so my goal is to never give people a reason not to trust me. And so when you're doing those things and you're doing them consistently, that's where you can really have an impact as a leader. And I think for far too long, we've had this, you know, mentality that you needed to be feared to be a good leader. And I used to always think about, I used to, like you, you're fascinated by leadership. I have been too in my career. Just, I do it a little less scientific, I think, than you do, Craig. But I used to think about, you know, that platoon in a war, and you've got a guy that's, you know, leading out front and saying, let's go take over that hill and charge. And the guys run up behind him versus the guy in the back in the Jeep who says the same thing and maybe doesn't quite get the same level of commitment, right? Mm-hmm. And that's something that always kind of resonated with me. That's to me, the epitome of leadership. How do you lead a bunch of young men into battle when they most likely will, you know, have their lives threatened? And for me, that's, again, it's about just being part of the team. I'm no different than you. I'm down in the trenches with you when I need to be. And we all have a role to play. Each is no more important than the other. And for some people, that will be a challenge. And I think that that's, you know, and that's something I don't think you can fake. So that authenticity, I think you've got to be that kind of leader. But I think everybody has the ability to care. I don't think that that's exclusive to only a few people. And that's all it takes, is to have a level of caring that is genuine, that people can feel and see and touch. And if you can do that, I think you're going to be a much more effective leader. I've always said, I don't want people to perform for me because I told them to. I want people to perform for me because they want to see us succeed, and they don't want to let me down. That's the kind of leader that I've always aspired to be.
No, and I think that's so great. And also, I mean, one of the points you touched on is exactly, it's why the podcast is called Do Good to Lead Well, right? As you say, this is about when you do the right thing, then it's not about you are going to perform and it's going to be exceptional. And so, you know, it's doing the right thing is powerful. Being a nice guy, that's not a detriment to building an amazing organization. And what I also appreciate, and it's such an important point, because so many people can, in interactions or situations, think about, now, who do I need to be in this situation, right? Or this conversation. And you touched on that earlier as well. And you're like, you know what? We're here chatting on a podcast. You're chatting to the senior leadership team. You're talking to someone in the employee meet and greets. Wherever it is, you know, wherever you go, there you are. And there's no deviation from that. And that's incredibly powerful, because then people recognize, hey, this is who you are, tried and true, over and over and over again. And you also mentioned a very important word as well, which is trust. It creates tremendous trust when people see that consistency. So this has just been amazing. We've touched on so, so much. We've gone through the origin story, early, you know, sports, early career, kind of that journey from tow truck driver to CEO. And building an extraordinary culture, which, again, like, congratulations. And I'm really glad you unpacked it even further about, this is not just three consecutive wins. This is a decade of consistent peak performance. Is there anything we didn't touch on, or anything you'd like some final thoughts to share? Because this is just so rich for people listening to this episode today.
Well, you know, I can sit and talk culture all day. That's something that is near and dear to my heart, and I have on occasion. You know, I think more and more CEOs and leaders are starting to understand that there's a new way to lead. Particularly, I think it was coming anyways, but I think the pandemic accelerated it, where we don't need to have this environment that's toxic. We spend a great deal of time at work. All of us do, whether that's remotely, virtually, some flex model, or in the office. But at this, you know, we don't need to make it a miserable experience. And what that means is that you can't have leaders who are leading in the past, which was the command and control. Do as I say. I'm not going to show you the respect that you deserve. I don't need to earn your trust because I'm the boss. And those are all things that are, I think, were, you know, already starting to kind of dissolve in the workplace, but the pandemic just accelerated. And I think from my experience of being with some like-minded individuals last week at the cultural summit that I attended, I can see that there's a movement that's headed in this direction. I'm very happy that I think Experia was at the front of that movement and have been for, as you said, the last decade. But I see more and more companies and more leaders that are jumping on board. And I think that's a great thing for society in general, because if we can do that in business, if we can be genuine, and if we can care, and if we can do all those things that I've talked about, and then that spills over into society more, then I think we start having a better world too, because I think it's something that the world needs. So, you know, this is why I believe in it so wholeheartedly. I've seen the results that it brings to business. It's interesting when I go and do corporate events and, you know, attend them. We have offices in Moncton and we have an office in Markham, Ontario. And when I go to these corporate events, when I have spouses of employees who will walk up to me and say, thank you. And I go, well, who are you? Well, I'm so-and-so's spouse, right? I want to thank you because I've never seen my wife so happy as I have seen her the last 2 years that she's been a part of your organization. And that's something that means something to me, right? And I go to bed every night with the big responsibility that there's a couple hundred families at Experia that rely on me to do the right things and to make the right decisions so that they can all continue to have, you know, at least be employed. But just as importantly is when that type of feedback comes to me where I've never seen my wife so happy. We have many people, multiple people within a family that work for us. I had to do a report to the board for a conflict of interest. I think we had 25 family members who recruited other family members to come work for us. That's when you know you're doing something right. When a mother is saying to the daughter, you need to come work here, or the brother says to his sister, you need to come work here. So anyways, I think there's a movement heading in this direction. And I think it's going to be good for business. I think it's going to be good for society in general. And that's why, I mean, it's something that I've always believed in, but it gives me extra motivation to know that there's a movement afoot here. And I think it's the right thing for our world.
That's awesome. And I love the closing point that you're making, Dan. And I agree. I think there is a movement afoot. And also, as you were sharing, and Experia is at the forefront of that. And what I love is that the concrete practices from which this is built on, and that persistence to it, and also the impact that it's had on the organization in so many different ways, and not just people directly in the organization. You talked about the impact on customers, now on family members. And so I just want to take a moment to thank you for your persistence and your commitment, your passion around this. And I love the BHAG, you know, making the world a better place. To spill out, you know, the positive cultures, lead the positive conversations in our communities. So thank you so much for sharing so many nuggets today that we can take away and apply in our personal and professional lives. And to everyone who's listening, thank you so much for your ongoing support, and can't wait to see you next time on an episode of Do Good to Lead Well. Bye for now.
Thank you so much for joining me here today on Do Good to Lead Well. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. If you'd like to continue the conversation, you can follow me on Twitter @CraigDowden or reach out via LinkedIn or email info@CraigDowden.com. I look forward to meeting you here next week for another transformational episode.